So this topic of befriending fear and befriending ourselves is one that's been percolating for me in the last week or so. And I feel like we'll see what form exactly it comes out in tonight. Even though I've, you know, prepared something, I feel like life keeps happening. You know, you plan something and then you have a really different day. So tonight I'm actually feeling rather tender-hearted. This afternoon I attended the burial of a friend's son who completed suicide last week. And late last night I learned that a really beloved friend was going into surgery this morning for a brain tumor that they found on Friday. So there's been a lot that's been swirling through my heart today, which is so perfect because here I am with you and like this is it, right? This is the Dharma of real life. It's really messy. It's really messy. And so, you know, today there's been all these things arising, you know, this sense of, you know, the vulnerability of this life, this precious human life, this preciousness of impermanence, you know, how fleeting this, and how magnificent, actually. That's also really been here for me, too. How magnificent this life is, you know, and how short. You know, our own and other people's for lots of different reasons. And I've been thinking a lot about community, about Sangha, and the power of how we hold each other with presence and love through these difficult moments. And I've also been thinking a lot about fear today. You know, this young man who chose to end his life last week had experienced a lot of anxiety at different points in time. And, you know, I think of my sitting with my friend as she's trying to metabolize this unfolding and, you know, all of her fears about what did I do wrong, what did I miss, the fear of my friend going into surgery, you know, my own fears of like, oh, possible loss, and just these poignant reminders. So all of this is here, and I've really been thinking about, like, how do we do this dance with fear? Because it's a frequent visitor for all of us at different times, you know, this fear of impermanence, fear of loss, fear of change, fear of strong feelings, fear of getting it wrong, sometimes fear of getting it right, fear of not being liked, fear of not being accepted, fear of fear. You know, that's actually an element of most fear, is that we fear our fear. We fear we're going to get lost. Overwhelmed, swallowed up by this fear. So it actually still feels like an appropriate topic, but it's getting channeled through like a really different lens, and we'll see where we go today. And I will name that my heart is feeling very full. My head is feeling a little on the empty side, so I may actually reference my notes a little more than I sometimes might as a kindness to myself, because there's some really, I think, important things I want to be able to make sure I share with you tonight. Because fear is this feeling, it's this universal human feeling, but most of us are not opening our arms wide to take it in, like, oh yeah. Yeah, I'd like a healthy dose of fear with, you know, my breakfast this morning. It's not what we want to take in. And so our typical response to fear is usually aversion or avoidance. that's been my experience. And having a nervous system that tends to rev in the anxious direction, I feel like it has been a powerful teacher over many decades for me. And I'm not rolling out the welcome mat for my fear most of the time. I just, you know, I want to hit the highway. I want to, you know, transform it as fast as I can. And the paradox about fear is that typically the quickest pathway to relief from fear is to turn around and face it. You know, and it's not our instinct. So in tonight's talk, you know, what I really would like to do is to look at how might we do that? You know, how might we actually sit down with and befriend our fear? You know, when I was having a conversation in a really benign context with a friend earlier this week. He was about to start a tile job, and he was like, "Oh, I'm anxious. I'm always anxious at the start of the job." And he said, "You know, but when I just do the work, the anxiety goes away." And it's so true, because fear, which comes in all these different flavors, worry, anxiety, fear, panic, it usually has these two ingredients. One, there's something unpleasant, or at least something imagined that's unpleasant, and we want to push it away. And it tends to lean us into the future. It takes us right up and out of the present. So my friend's comment was just so perfect, because it's like, oh yeah, if I just do the work, the anxiety goes away. If I'm just here, like laying one tile at a time, it's okay. So often if we're here one breath at a time, it's actually often okay, even in the midst of like the worst that we can imagine. So I want to explore this today in some practical ways. I think I want to ground this in the practical, having just lived through a week where I've sat with a lot of people with a lot of fear. And so I just feel moved to want to, like, you know, give you some things to put in your back pocket so that maybe the next time fear visits, you have something else or additional to reach for. And they may be very familiar resources or practices, but, you know, it never hurts to have a refresher, because we often totally forget what we know, especially when we're afraid. It just goes out the window. So the more we hear it, the more it really gets in there, so we can reach for it and use it and take good care of ourselves. So one of the things that one of my teachers, Peter Williams, says a lot about fear is that we should accept more and believe less. Like, that's his bumper sticker that I often return to. Accept more, believe less. It's pithy. It's good. And, you know, part of that is because really powerful emotions are so compelling. They're so convincing. You know, they have a really good story. And fear usually has a really good story. Oh my God. You know, it's going to be like this. And it's going to be like this forever. You know, so it leans us into the future, and then it freeze frames things. You ever notice that? And it's really hard to believe or see anything bigger in that moment. And so it can be so helpful to accept more, believe less. You know, to give those strong emotions a lot of space, a lot of room to move, and we can be with them and witness them compassionately, but we don't have to buy into the story they're telling. You know, we don't have to stop the story either, thank God, because it's really hard to shut fear up, you know, but we don't have to believe it. And I want to unpack, you know, what does that actually look like? How might we actually do that? How might we accept more and believe less? And what came up for me this past week in reflecting on this was another pithy teaching by Sally Armstrong, 6 Little Words, and I may have used them in a different context in here because it's one I come back to again and again, which is to stay close, be curious, and be kind. And tonight, I want to unpack those in reverse for working with fear, because with fear, I think it's really important to start with be kind, be curious, and stay close. So we're going to start with kindness, this quality of befriending. And I spoke of befriending, I think in a talk maybe even earlier this year, and it's a word I've sort of fallen in love with again in the last couple of years. And befriending is really this quality. It's this way of being a companion to our experience. And it's this way of being a companion to ourselves when we're having an experience. And what I love about befriending is, you know, just like a good friend, it, you know, can lean in, can listen, can hang out with you no matter what's going on. This quality we can bring to ourselves in a similar way. It's not dependent. This quality of befriending is actually not dependent on the valence of the experience. We can befriend something that's excruciatingly painful, and we can befriend something that's really pleasant or precious. So even though tonight we're kind of turning this towards fear, I just want to acknowledge that, because all of these practices, actually the benefit is, if you can do any of this with fear, just think what you could do with joy or delight, you know? So like, hold that in the wings as we're looking at this piece here. And it really widens and deepens our experience of the fullness of our humanity. And so this quality of befriending is something that it's really important to me that we bring it close to home. Those of you who have heard me speak before know I'm really passionate about self-compassion. You know, because we often befriend others, or we even befriend the moment or our experience long before we ever befriend ourselves. And I'm such a fan for this expansion of our inclusivity. It's not about like leaving anybody else or anything else out. It's like just not forgetting that when we offer a hug, we're actually inside the circle of our own embrace. You know, and how do we befriend ourselves? And so, even if that's somewhat foreign territory, because many of us are like, I don't know, I know how to do it for somebody else, but I don't know how to do it for me. You know, actually, most of us, if you've practiced and you're sitting in this room, so I know that you have some experience, and I know many of you have decades of experience, you actually do know this quality of befriending because it's embedded in mindfulness. You know, this simple practice of coming into the now and knowing the moment has an inherent quality of friendliness, you know? Because there's a friendliness in presence. You know, because really, think about sitting with a good friend. What's one of the best gifts they can give you? Being present. I really was reminded of that sitting with this friend the night she, you know, found her son's body. I have to tell you, you know, a PhD in psychology and decades of experience wasn't worth anything. All I could offer her was my presence, really. It was like I could just sit there and witness, it's like this. And it's excruciating, but it's like this. So that's that quality of friendliness now, knowing the moment and knowing it with these unique qualities of non-harming, you know, like this wholesome intent, like I'm just gonna sit with you, or I'm gonna sit with the moment with this intention to just hold you and not do any harm, not do any harm. And a quality of non-judging, You know, I'm not going to judge what's arising. And non-judging also has embedded in it that quality of no preference. You know, like, can my presence be as expansive, so expansive that I can hold even this, even though I don't like it, or even though I wish it were different? So, and then a sense of the wisdom that can arrive in that of non-identification. You know, like, this isn't personal. This isn't personal. It's like this, and this is just what's arising and moving through the moment. And so if you've touched, you know, mindfulness, and you've brought any of these extra, you know, these qualities, these flavorings to your attention, now knowing the moment and doing so with a quality of non-harming, non-judging, and non-identification, then I believe you have touched the quality of befriending. Because if we really sit with someone or our experience or ourselves with that energy, we are actually befriending, you know. And befriending's not about liking. You know, it's not like, wow, this is the moment I would have chosen. But it's really that capacity to be with, to be with. The dictionary, I can't remember which one now. I love dictionaries, so I'm always looking up words. One of the definitions I found for befriend was act as or become a friend to someone, especially when they are in need of help or support. And I just love this definition because, you know, it really points to that befriending is a verb. It's an action. It's a practice. It's something we can cultivate. We can live. You know, it's not something that we do and we put on a shelf. It is something we embody. And it's something we can embody for ourselves. And I actually was thinking that, you know, that tonight, one of the things I wanted to do was actually guide us in a very in a short, actually my two favorite self-compassion practices, you know, and I don't know, I'm hoping none of you had a day quite like the one I had, truly, but I was like, oh, I could use a little more self-compassion, and I might not be the only one. And these are two of my favorite practices. They're taught in the first week of the Mindful Self-Compassion class, and I teach them to almost every client I work with, and I've taught them to friends going through hard things, and they're like really good medicine and good meditation for a moment, you know, just a difficult moment. And in preparation for that, I just wanted to name, some of you are familiar with the definition that Kristen Neff has offered for mindful self-compassion, but I really love it because it offers these pathways that we can access to cultivate this quality of befriending for ourselves. And it has three ingredients that you'll probably be familiar with, and I've been thinking about them a lot today and in this past week. And the first one is mindfulness. You know, before we can actually be compassionate, we really need to see that we are in pain. Seems so simple, so obvious, and yet we often ignore or minimize our own suffering. You know, it's like, oh, this really shouldn't be such a big deal. I should be able to get over this. You know, or we get distracted. You know, we work harder. It's like, I'm just going to plow into my to-do list. You know, we just don't actually pause to notice, like, ouch, this really hurts. This is really hard. So it's a powerful thing to notice, to acknowledge, to offer hospitality to our pain when it's there. And then this sense of common humanity, because often what we feel is a sense of isolation. You know, we feel this sense of, oh my God, what did I do wrong? I mean, this is where, you know, my friend whose son committed suicide, this is where my friend who was, you know, it's like, what did I do wrong? What did I miss? What happened? This should not be happening. You know, and often with fear, we experience a deep sense of isolation, you know, and that magnifies the fear. It's like, oh, I'm scared and I feel alone with the fear and I'm encapsulated in it, and the fear gets heavier and it feels bigger and we don't know what to do with it. So this common humanity that says, wow, you know, suffering is part of this human life. Like, wow, this is the fear everybody feels when they're going into surgery. This is the unbelievable pain any parent feels if their child dies. You know, it's like, this is my belonging, actually. It's a club maybe I don't want to belong to, but like, it's powerful. It's really powerful. And then the third ingredient is kindness. Also seems really obvious. And it's often left out because, you know, we go to judgment, we go to guilt, we go to blame. You know, I think of some of the things I heard coming out of, you know, my friend's mouth. It's like, I will never forgive myself. I should have known. I should, you know, it's like this is where we go sometimes when things are painful or we're afraid. Like, what did I do? You know, I'm afraid I missed something. And so, you know, not even necessarily having to get rid of all those thoughts or feelings, but to add in, wow, may I find some way to be gentle with myself as I make sense of this. May I be patient, you know, may I be kind, or may I learn to be kind to myself in the middle of this. So there are these ways that we can befriend ourselves, and so I wanted to just guide you briefly in these two practices, and then add in a little more as we build on this about being curious and staying close. But let's just really deepen into being kind, because I just feel like we can't ever overdo that. That's my bias. So if you're willing, you can settle in and let it be easy. You don't even have to like assume the position. I'm a big fan of, in compassion practice, of like, let it be easy. Let it be comfortable. And I'm going to guide us in two practices that just dovetail right into each other. And one is exploring finding a soothing gesture. And part of this builds on what we know of the neurophysiology of activation and fear, is that it drops us into our reptilian brain, and the language of the reptilian brain is somatic. So we often can't talk our way out of fear, but finding a soothing gesture often calms the nervous system and helps ground us amidst fear. So I'll guide us through that practice, and then I will guide us into a self-compassion break. So feeling yourself just sitting here breathing, and, you know, softening the gaze or letting the eyes close if that's comfortable for you. And this soothing gesture practice, I'll just be naming and offering a number of gestures that you can try on and just see what you like, see what you don't like. Notice if there's any feeling of calming, kindness, comfort, soothing in any of them. There's no way to do this right. There's no way to do it wrong. It's just the gift of exploring and discovering. So you might begin with one or both hands over the heart center, just seeing what it feels like to receive the warmth of your own hands. taking a breath or two here. Or maybe a hand on the heart and a hand on the belly, feeling your way into this gesture, just seeing what it evokes, a sense of ease or comfort or kindness. No supposed to's, just curiosity. Or maybe somehow you're drawn to having two hands on the belly in whatever way feels good. And as I'm guiding, you know, there may be variations that you're drawn to, so really let this be your own exploration. You don't have to follow my words exactly. You might bring one palm up to a cheek and rest your face into the palm of your hand. Maybe this is a stationary gesture. Maybe there's a little rubbing or stroking of the cheek or a patting of the cheek. Or maybe you bring the other hand up to the other cheek, cupping your face in your hand. Just again, noticing with each gesture, what's here? Is there any sense of soothing or comfort or care, calm? Maybe exploring if there's a way to give yourself a hug. Maybe crossing your arms and bringing hands to the upper arms. Maybe giving yourself a gentle squeeze, or there might be a little rubbing of the upper arms, a reassuring gesture. Taking a breath. Sometimes what we're drawn to is something that's familiar, some way others have comforted us, and sometimes in this exercise, people are totally surprised. So you can let yourself be surprised. Maybe seeing what it's like to bring the palms of the hands down to the thighs. Maybe there's a gentle pressing, a little reassuring or grounding, or a gentle squeeze of the thighs, or maybe a rubbing of the legs. Just seeing, what do you like? What do you not like? No right way. Or maybe seeing if there's some way of holding your own hand. Lots of variations here. Maybe cupping the palms together. Maybe one hand resting over the other. Maybe there's some way you want to interlace your fingers. Just seeing if there's any way to hold your own hand. And you may or may not feel like you've found your gesture yet, but if there was one that you were sort of drawn to or that you liked, letting yourself go back to it and letting yourself carry this gesture forward into this next practice of a self-compassion break that I'll just guide us right into. And for this exercise, I invite you to call to mind something that's of modest difficulty. You know, as a kindness, don't call to mind the most difficult thing going on in your life right now. It might pop up, and you can set it to the side, and, you know, looking for something that might be a 3 or 4 on a scale of 0 to 10, if you were rating it. And it might be, you know, something going on in your body, a discomfort, an injury. It might be, you know, a tension in a relationship. It might be some stress at work. And calling this to mind just enough so that you can feel the distress in your body. not getting lost in the story of all the details, but just tapping into a felt sense of what this evokes. Perhaps feeling some tension somewhere in the body, and just noticing that, where it is, what it feels like. And then saying these words silently to yourself. Oh, this is a moment of suffering. This is a moment of suffering. Bringing mindfulness to really seeing your own difficulty. And there might be other words that feel like a better fit. Maybe it's, oh, this is really hard. This is painful. Ouch. And then saying these words silently to yourself. Suffering is part of every human life. Suffering is part of every human life. Acknowledging the common humanity. It's not a mistake. And there might be other words. Oh, all people struggle sometimes. Or I'm not alone. And then inviting in some kindness. It might be the kindness of feeling more deeply, the offering of this gesture of comfort. It might be some simple words of kindness, like, oh, may I be kind to myself. May I learn to be kind to myself. Maybe there's some particular words you really need to hear related to this difficulty. Oh, may I be gentle, may I be patient. May I find ease or release from this pain. And if you are finding it hard to know what to say to yourself, you might think, what would a dear friend say to me? Or what might I say to a dear friend who is struggling in a similar way? And then see what it's like to offer those same words to your own heart. And then you can just let go of thinking of this difficulty, maybe take a final few breaths with your gesture if you like, just letting the breath be easy and natural, letting your experience be just as it is, letting yourself be just as you are, just for now. And in your own time, gradually releasing the practice altogether, opening your eyes and coming back out into this space here. So if it speaks to you, you know, these can be really helpful practices, especially when meeting ourselves in moments when we're afraid. You know, it helps bring us, you know, if this is your brain, neuroscience 101 right here, and this is your frontal lobe, you know, that nice thinking narrative part of the mind. When we're afraid, we literally flip our lid and we're living down here in the amygdala, and the elevator's going down into the brainstem, the reptilian brain. And so when we bring in self-compassion through a gesture, the language of this part of the brain. We start to, and the self-compassion break with these phrases of acknowledging, oh, this is a moment of pain or suffering. Suffering is part of every human life, and may I be kind. It starts to actually bring us up into our mammalian caregiving brain, which gets us closer to the frontal lobe, coming back online, and then all those other good things you know how to do for yourself are more accessible. So, you know, that sense of like you can't talk yourself out of a panic, like neurobiologically, you can't. It's not a deficit, it's not a personal failing. So we can use our practice and what we know about neuroscience to actually really support ourselves when we're scared. And when this quality of friendliness or warmth or care is present, it's actually easier to be curious. At least that's what I've found. You know, it's hard to be curious about something when I'm scared out of my wits. You know, I just want to escape. But if I can be befriend myself first, I then have a better chance of befriending the experience or the moment. And there's this quality of acceptance. I can sit down and be like, huh, fear, what's it like? What's it like? You know, and one of the best practices for exploring fear or any other difficult emotion, which I know probably many of you have heard, is RAIN, Michelle McDonald's practice. But, you know, I know for me, repetition is such a powerful teacher in the Dharma. Like, it just steeps into us deeper and deeper and deeper. And every time I hear a teaching and every time I revisit a practice, it's like it's more and more a part of me as I walk through the world. And so this practice of recognizing, oh, fear. Fear is visiting. Fear is here. Oh. And you notice the tone of voice. Kindness is coming along for the ride, because it's not like, oh, fear. You know, it's like, oh, fear. You know, it's got this energy of like, oh yeah, sweetheart. Huh. I see that, you know, fear is taking over the body. Yeah, here it is. And actually just naming, I love neuroscience, so I geek out on it sometimes, but there's this great study by Creswell and his colleagues. I forget where he's from, but he and his colleagues have done research that just naming a difficult emotion decreases the likelihood of a full-blown stress response. So just being able to say, like, oh, fear, whew, softens what unfolds next. And then there's this quality of, you know, allowing or acceptance. And the thing about acceptance, you know, I think about it because it gets a bad rap in the English language, acceptance does. I think of it as courageous clear seeing. It's not about liking. It's like, it's cutting through and it's like, oh, it's like this. It's like this. And allowing is unconditional. You know, this is where I'm going to put my little sidebar. One of my little sidebars that watch for that sneaky agenda. I'm recognizing, I'm allowing, I might even let myself get to I, investigate, inquire. That's the curiosity. Oh, fear, what's it like? You know, but watch for the agenda. I'm doing it and it's still here. Why is it still here? Why am I afraid? I'm not supposed to be afraid. I'm doing RAIN. It's supposed to go away. And I just want to say, this is what I've discovered. That is not allowing. That's a different A. That's aversion. You know, that's aversion. When we are doing something to make something go away, that is not in the spirit of allowing. Allowing's like this, aversion's like this. So, I've come to try to be more honest with myself about that. Like, which A am I really doing? Am I allowing or am I being aversive? So, you know, I have a messy relationship with fear, so I know when I'm honest, I'm doing a lot of aversion more often than I'd like to admit. So there is this quality of acceptance, like, oh, it's like this. And what's cool is actually if we notice the aversion, just allow the aversion. It's like this. I'm afraid, and I don't like being afraid. And can my embrace be even wider so that I can just allow myself to not like being afraid? Whew, I love how our practice just saves us. We don't have to do it neatly. It can be really messy, and we can just offer a lot of hospitality to the whole unfolding. And there is this investigation, you know, this quality of, what's it like? What's fear like? And it's about dropping the story. And there's this great quote, and actually the person who gifted me this quote years ago happens to be here tonight, so I'm so excited. It's one of my favorites. And it's by Cy Safransky. I left my story in a barn so someone else could keep milking it. I left my story in the fitting room. It didn't fit me anymore. I left my story at the hospital because it wouldn't stop bleeding. I left my story at the rest stop. It needed a rest. I left my story at the body shop because it always wanted a different one. I left my story with some cash so it could never say, poor me. I left my story without saying where I was going because I didn't want it to follow me. It never even noticed I was gone. So we drop the story, and in RAIN, we drop into the present moment experience of what's happening here. And what's happening here is not the time traveling that's happening in the mind. It's what's happening in the body. And that's actually a much more manageable scale on which to sit with fear. Oh, fear, where is it? Oh, there's a knot in my stomach, or my hands are shaking, or, you know, there's just this sort of vibratory energy, like I want to jump out of my skin, or, you know, my heart's racing. It's like, oh. And then we start to have a chance to notice the microscopic changes moment by moment by moment. Oh, fear. Fear is not this frozen experience. It's this alive, dynamic, ever-changing, evolving experience that we could be curious about. And when we're curious, you know, what happens? Often when we give something attention, it, you know, it's like a toddler. I have a toddler or an angsty teenager. I have a client who's just like, she's like, fear is like a rebellious teenager. It wants your attention, and it keeps doing stuff, and it keeps doing stuff, but like, you know, if you kind of pay attention to it, it's not so exciting. You know, the drama sort of can dissipate sometimes. And I think that's really true with fear. If we can turn toward it, it often really can get its needs met, especially if we can bring that kindness to it. And then sometimes we experience the end. The end we don't get to make happen. You know, it's non-identification. It's like we might start to see or feel like, oh, I'm not my fear. Fear is arising, it's moving through, it's passing, and we get to see its nature. You know, that's often the other way I like to think of the end, is just, you know, that I've heard teachers describe as nature. Oh, this is the nature of fear. It's not my fear. It's just like, this is fear. This is what fear is like in the human experience. And so, so that's one of the best ways. And bringing in the kindness, always keeping the kindness. The other way we can use RAIN that's really important, especially with fear, is we can investigate the fear, but we can also widen the view and investigate where is the fear not located. Because we often get so contracted in where the fear is that that's all we see. And it's actually very rare that fear inhabits every cell of your body. Sometimes, I don't want to discount those experiences. But a lot of times it's like, is the fear in my left earlobe? No. Is the fear in my toes? No. You know, so if we can find those places in the body where we're not afraid, they can be respite, a refuge. We can hang out and investigate that. Like, so what's really going on in my feet right now? It's a little break from just, you know, locking down on the fear. And so when we work in this way of titrating, you know, starting with kindness, then getting curious, it helps us stay close more easily, I've found. You know, because we can stay close in a more balanced way, you know. And if we find ourselves lost in aversion, like, I can't stand this, I want it to go away, that to me, when I find myself lost in aversion, what I have come to find is that that's usually a sign I need to go right back to kindness and practice more kindness so that the container that's holding me and is holding the fear is even stronger and gentler at the same time. You know, there's such a strength in compassion and kindness, and we often need that. And really, really big fear needs really, really big love to hold it, you know. And I was just reminded of that, you know, this week, and especially sitting with my friend, it was like, wow, you know, the walls couldn't hold that amount of grief and that amount of fear about what happened, and then the fear about, this is going to be my life. I will never get over this. I mean, and even in a week, she's like, oh, I've had better days. I've laughed. I've had these other memories. But like in that moment, all she could see was like this, you know? And so lots and lots of love. Like that's what we can bring to others and to ourselves. And so, you know, the kindness in that is we, you know, titrate. We have small doses. We take breaks. You know, sometimes we widen the view beyond just where in the body is there no fear. Sometimes we widen out to, you know, sound. You know, we get outside the body completely in our practice. Many of us have practices that take us into the five senses, or, you know, the most helpful practice to my friend in the midst of that intense panic was, tell me five things you can see. We got right back into the five physical senses in this moment, you know, and it was like, did she stay in this moment? No. But she could visit it again and again and again. Oh, I can see a plant. I can see the floor. I can see you. So we can do that same thing for ourselves with fear. You know, get really basic. Find the moment. As practitioners, we know how to find the moment. And I like to get really concrete, you know, finding the moment in the breath when you're in the midst of fear, because the breath is often compromised with fear. We're hyperventilating or we're not breathing well. It's not always the kindest anchor to have. So things like sound, things like sights, things like neutral sensations in the body, all of those are beautiful practices, you know. And sometimes it's also helpful to have an informal practice of acknowledgement. This is another one that I learned from Peter years ago. He calls it his of course practice. And it's, you know, having some phrase of welcome for the moment. You can do this as a formal practice on your cushion, or you can do it informally. I do it informally probably way more than I ever do it formally, of, you know, all kinds of crazy things are arising in the body or in the mind. And it's just like, oh, of course you're scared. Oh my gosh, I'm like ruminating. Of course you're ruminating, you know. Oh, I'm really jittery. Of course. You know, and if of course doesn't work for you, it could be like, oh, this too. Or it's like this. Or simply yes. I have a client who's like, hello, you know. Or thank you. like, I see you, and I'm going to let that flow right on through me, you know? So it's just this acknowledgement. It's sort of it's not getting lost in the hamster wheel of what's going on, but it's also not getting in a fight with it, because we often can't fight with our anxiety, but we can. So we accept more, believe less. You know, I'm going to accept you. I see you arising. I'm not going to follow that train. And I'm going to just, you know, of course. And just like, you know, soap bubbles that are bursting, they come and they go. So I think I want to circle back to one of the things I mentioned of where I began, and, you know, thinking about all these practices, you know, that I've offered, you know, be kind, be curious, stay close, and the ways you can do that, you know, intentionally inviting in self-compassion, a gesture, a self-compassion break, these little phrases that you can use in a quick moment, rain if you want to investigate, you know, of course, or widening the view and getting concrete, lots of tools to use for working with fear. And sometimes I think in this journey, in this practice, in this tradition, we do all this work right here. Beautiful. And I've really been so touched these last few days by that third jewel of Sangha. So I think I just want to end by naming that, you know, because so much of what I've been talking about so far tonight has been the Dharma, you know, those teachings of wisdom and love that empower us to navigate everything life throws our way, and the Buddha, that energy of, wow, here's this being that embodies that, that models for us how do we live this Dharma, and this whole lineage of beings that have lived in this way, and points to our own capacity, our own Buddha nature that can cultivate and utilize these practices. And we are all held in community, and communities come in so many different forms. And I think when we are afraid, community can be so invaluable in supporting us, you know, and it might be the Sangha here, you know, our practice Sangha. It might be knowing that there's just this larger Sangha worldwide that are following these teachings, and it may be the Sangha of your family or your neighborhood or your circle of friends. And, you know, that's the common humanity, you know, and I know we all have different support structures, you know, some of us have bigger ones than others, but, you know, to have a friend, even just one, and sometimes those friends, you know, can come in the form of, you know, a book. I've picked up some of Pema Chodron's books this past week again, like When Things Fall Apart. You know, it can be in inspired teachings. It could be in role models that we have in the world. And so friends in troubled times and in moments of fear come in all forms and shapes. And I just really want to acknowledge that. And would love to end with a poem that feels like it honors the quality of Sangha, and then we can dedicate the merit. So this is a poem by Carrie Newcomer entitled Cups of Light. You always arrive bringing light, carried in chipped pitchers and dented buckets, sloshing all that luminous liquid out like soapy water washing down the muddy floorboards of my weary or worried days. Yes, there were others, the ones who came carrying jars full of shadows, which are also a kind of gift, I suppose. But you, my friend, you always, always arrive bringing dawn. You open the windows, repair the screen door without fanfare or agenda, pour out and share cups full of light. And when I am most dry, you let me drink it all down, wiping my thirsty soul with the back of a grateful hand. So let's just pause for a few breaths and to honor the goodness, the wholesomeness of being here together now, knowing the moment. Be sitting together in community with these intentions of non-harming, non-judging, non-identification. Recognizing the goodness of gathering to practice together and knowing that we never practice for just ourselves, but offering any of the merit of this shared time together, reflecting on wisdom and love, sharing that outward to any beings, all beings, who may be struggling or suffering or just getting by in this crazy, crazy world we live in, fragile and magnificent. May all beings receive the cups of light that they may need in dark moments. May all beings know true happiness and be free of suffering.